Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Sound Solutions session at the 49th Annual ARS Conference. My name is Will Chase, and it's my pleasure to introduce our first presentation. This is Brandon Burke and James Sam. The name of their talk is If Radio's Gonna Stay, Leveraging Collaboration to Manage, Preserve, and Provide Access to the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Records at the Hoover Institution Archives. Brandon Burke is archivist for recorded sound collections at the Hoover Institution Library and Archives at Stanford University. He holds an MLIS in preservation and administration from the University of Texas at Austin and a BA in American Studies from the University of Kansas. Brandon chaired ARSC's Associated Audio Archivists Committee from 2006 to 2010, and is currently vice chair of EASA's Broadcast Archives section. Since 2006, James Sam has worked over at the Hoover Institution Library and Archives at Stanford University. There, among other duties, he oversees the technical aspects of the audio preservation program, working with some of the world's most important recordings on war, revolution, and peace. Previously, he worked for the audio services vendor, The Cutting Corporation. He is a member of the Audio Engineering Society's Standards and Historical Committees, and for ARSC, he has spoken at several past conferences, and papers he co-wrote have appeared in the journal. So Brandon Burke and James Sam, everybody.
Thanks, everybody, and thanks, Will. I'm getting over a cold or allergies or something, so you get my radio voice, actually, probably today, as it were. I'll tell you a little, you heard about us, I'll tell you a little about the institution. Hoover Institution began as a library and archives decades before becoming the public policy research center that many understand it to be today. In fact, it's literally Herbert Hoover's personal library gifted to Stanford, his alma mater, in 1919. And our collection policy is to collect, preserve, and make available important material about political, social, and economic change in the world. Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, there's quite a bit to say about it. I had to kind of whittle it down here. It was founded in 1950 and initially broadcast to Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Poland, and Romania. 3 years later, Radio Liberty began broadcasting to the Soviet Union in Russian and 15 other national languages. The Radio Free Europe serves as a surrogate news service and culture source, effectively smuggling, as it were, Western culture behind, at its inception, the Iron Curtain, but nowadays more the Middle East, among other regions. And to be sure, those in the position to have an opinion for those people, Radio Free Europe means different things to different people. I can tell you from experience having worked closely and visited several national libraries and archives in Eastern Europe, and having fielded often impassioned reference requests from people overseas, that it's really important material to the nations and the cultures that it serves. In particular, cultures that have experienced sweeping political change, and I'm thinking of Prague Spring in 1968, the Romanian Revolution in 1989, and there's a Captain Beefheart reel in the Romanian service, which is great. The pictured here is Woody Herman, having appeared at the radios. We don't have a date on that. And I'm going to play you a quick clip here. This is Admiral Harold Miller announcing the creation of the Polish Language Service on May 3rd, 1952. This is very short.
This day marks the inauguration of a new, powerful transmitter speaking to Poland. I feel confident that history will bear me out when I say to you that this is an important day, and this is an important new radio station.
Hoover acquired the collection in 1999. We accessioned it in 2000. This is before I arrived. I arrived in 2004. 15 shipping containers shipped the first increment to Hoover in 2001 and 2002. It was so overwhelming that intake had to be performed at an off-site storage area, data safe in Union City, California, in the East Bay. Today, we've whittled the number of manuscript boxes down to 10,000, having weeded a lot of dupes. RFERL is a corporation like anyone else, so if it was the Wells Fargo or the AT&T archives, you can imagine the amount of dupes you'd have to weed. Sound recordings, which we'll discuss in a bit, number minimum 300,000, 302,000. 9,200 linear feet of material. It is the largest collection on permanent deposit at the Hoover Institution Library and Archives. And to give you a sense of perspective here, 9,200 linear feet is just a hair under 1 3/4 linear miles of material. The finding aid is literally 793 pages. And to really put that in perspective, that's at the series level. That is not an item level finding aid. Processing, this is really quick. They came to us, the papers did, separated as broadcast and corporate. Broadcast being the papers and the sound recordings created in the course of making sound recordings, the other being administrative records. Here's an overview of the audio inventory. There's a recent increment that prevented us from getting a total count of mini discs, which prevented us from getting a total count of all of the sound recordings, which is why it's a bit of an estimate. And you might be saying, why didn't you count them before giving a presentation on this subject, Brandon? And that is because we just got them and there's two palettes. So I haven't gotten to those yet. Here's a graphic representation of the audio inventory that rather accidentally looks like the Criterion Collection symbol. And if you really want to get granular, this is what I look at when I'm doing the inventory and updating. So I'll give you 3, 4, you can memorize that. Storage and housing. When I began in 2004, the 7-inch reels occupied the bottom two rows of a very, very large stack area. With completely unrelated materials above, entire walls were lined with unboxed tapes that were unfixed to the wall, which is less of an issue when you don't live in California, but that's a very big issue for us. So you can imagine the confusion of 87,891 reels in 29 languages all tumbled to the floor on one afternoon. Over the course of several years, a succession of students and hourlies rehoused these 7-inch reels into custom boxes designed by Hoover preservation staff and recorded sound staff, affording us the ability to retrieve and digitize boxes or items at the box level, I should say, in addition to providing extra protection and stability in the event of an earthquake. And these are actually pretty tightly. They're not tight enough to cause damage to the materials. They're tight. They're just tight enough to kind of, you can't really wiggle them too much. So they fit snug in two different orientations, as you can see here. On the left side, these are shelving units that line the walls, and on the right side, shelving units that are freestanding. These images might look familiar to people that attended our tour in the, I think it was the 2009 ARS conference. Very quick here, this is what an end cap looks like. We've got industrial dehumidifier units keeping RH levels plus minus 55, I think. New increments now. This is the same shot of the two pallets not having arrived at Hoover yet. It is truly the gift that keeps on giving. For perspective, this is often how a box comes in, rather like last year's Christmas decorations. This problem is not exclusive to Radio Free Europe. It's just the nature of the business. We're lucky, frankly, that the material wasn't in a barn or in a leaky basement or something, which is often the case. New increments go through this very simple process that I'm kind of describing now. Boxes, open the box, they look like that. We have to assign some kind of meaning to them, or they're never going to get access, or they're never going to get requested. We won't know to find them if they're there. So at the very least, we assign a language service and a date, and then when we can, file them with like materials. Here you get a bit of a mixed example. Those are Uzbek tapes. And then they kind of go right into Kazakh tapes, but I think you get the idea. So Jim will take over and talk about migration now.
Hi, Jim Sam here. There's, you know, it's pretty standard for what we do here, but or at Hoover. There's two things that we kind of juggle. Reference requests interrupt both of them, but they fall into the content-based thing. We worry about the actual item, the accession carrier, the tape, the disc, whatever. And we're definitely worried about things that won't last, like lacquer discs. There aren't that many in the RFE collection. Let me just step back for a second to be totally correct. I often say RFE, but I mean the whole organization. There's some politics at play there. So we worry about the item and But the big thing for the RFURL collection is the machine obsolescence, both for the typical things like the open reel tapes, but also for the logging media, which is a freak show in a second that you'll see. But content is king, and that definitely influences our selection criteria. The Prague Spring and the U.S. involvement in Afghanistan from starting about a decade ago. Those, you know, you can see on the slide, they're media that we would normally preserve anyway, but we went at them from the content perspective, which is also why we did the Romanian stuff, which is one fantastically stable polyester tapes. We only migrate unique recordings, so if there's been something that's been digitized in somewhere in Eastern Europe or it's a commercially released program, we don't digitize that. As much as I would like to spend time with this, the Romanian services broadcast program Metronome is just, you know, playing the day's hits. We don't do that, so we are not going to digitize them playing Metallica's Metal Militia, but that's just the way it is. Destination specs, pretty standard. We do 48K instead of 96K because these are mainly 7.5 mono IPs of voice recordings, not too much music, and when it is music, it's generally not unique music. So 48K has our storage concerns. Anything that was digital, physical at the same time, mini discs, CDRs, they're ripped at the native resolution. We rip the mini discs at A-track, but then we also immediately convert that to PCM. So pretty standard, everlasting content approach there. Four things going on at the lab at any given time. One is always RFURL. And it's really, at this point, it's dependent on our oven capacity, which is a really good problem to have. This is a quick shot of the lab. You can see there's a lot of padding on there to control the sound. It's dead like a 70s kick drum, which is actually fantastic for hearing problems with the physical playback. If anyone's here is still learning how to do digitization, listening to the actual machine that you're working on is a big help for spotting problems in a transfer. And when you have multiple concurrent transfers, it's essential. We were lucky that most of the studers that you see there on the right, they were all donated with the collection by RFE, which presents some unique challenges when you consider that these are broadcasters. And if anyone knows about broadcasters, they used their equipment. When the transfers are going on, we capture as much metadata as possible, trying to only use human time to capture human metadata. The content, when it can be understood, is captured in our database. Anything about the actual analog item is captured. We're trying to automate the back end and the digital side as much as possible. So, you know, after it's been digitized, the embedding of the metadata and the creation of MD5s is pretty streamlined through scripts. Thank you to everyone that was involved with the creation of MetaEdit. It's been a great batch tool. And again, pretty standard BEXT info, AS60, XML, MD5. And we also, it's beyond embedding the MD5, we also create an external one for our digital materials manager to work with. The embedded metadata, not to keep on harping on this topic, for the needs of this collection is essential because we're sending files back and forth across the Atlantic constantly. So as you can imagine, anything that we do is stamped in the sense we did it at Hoover, and that's important for the tracking purposes. Again, I'm really worried about the machine obsolescence. We have an amazing repair tech in San Francisco, but he's getting up there in age and he's cheap. So when he runs out and it gets incredibly harder and harder to more expensive to digitize things, that's one of the big things with this collection. And so now, speaking about machine obsolescence, talk about some of the media, logging media that we have to deal with. This is one of my favorite pictures. I'm sorry that you can't really see what's going on here. This is a quarter-inch tape that has 6 tracks on it. As far as I know, only one machine has ever been able to do that beyond what custom things you can put together. So if anyone has that Philips machine hanging out in their basement, please get in contact with us. Another example, a dictaphone logging machine, 1-inch tape, 12 outgoing channels. Raycole WordSafe, this is used in police stations, insurance companies for telephone recordings. What you're looking at is, this is a machine that uses VHS tapes to record 25 hours per tape. That's to be able to deal with daylight savings time. And so it's a rather unique machine. I have to give a quick shout out to Richard Hess for helping us understand what this machine is for donating one of his machines to us. And it's been really wonderful working with him. He put us in touch with a guy in New Jersey that we had preliminary discussions about creating a new machine to rip these tapes instead of playing back in real time, because 25 hours times 16 tracks per tape, you can imagine, for real-time playback, that's just not going to happen. The last of the freak show, the RCS tracker. This is what you're basically looking at is proprietary computers that record proprietary software and store them on a DDS tape. The real fun part about this one and why you should never lock yourself into a proprietary system is because if you call up RCS, who's still around, they're a major player in broadcast. I imagine they're a great company. Their customer service representatives are great. But if you call them up and you ask them about Tracker, they think you're talking about something that's not this. They think you're talking about a software application. It would be innocuous to a Chevy dealer not realizing that the Chevy Nova was both a muscle car and a subcompact car back in the day. So we try to do as much in-house as we can, but every now and then we send things out to various vendors. It's basically pretty simple. If it comes in with external money, it gets done by somebody else. We only have so much wear and tear that we can put on our machines, so much time for labor and whatnot. So it makes sense. Inability to play the carriers is one. And quality control is you know, it's always fun, especially with this collection, because again, it's a faint problem, but if maybe you can see, first of all, is this picture foreign to anybody? Does everyone know what this is? All right, spectrum analysis. If anyone's worried about doing QC in-house, this is the most wonderful tool in the world to do QC with. Anyway, if you can see on this one, at the very top, there's a sprinkling of purple at the top, and then there's a black line, and that black line is someone that used a high Q equalizer just to kill a noise. And so when you send a tape out and you get one back with these kind of lines, at first, what the hell happened? But then you realize that it was actually a production decision. So Brandon's going to talk more about those partnerships.
Okay, we define partners as anyone in the network of institutions with holdings related to RFERL, including RFERL, that helps us preserve, describe, and make available materials created by or related to the radios. This is an alphabetical list. I didn't want to give preferential treatment to anyone. The acronym there is the Institute for the Investigation of Communist Crimes and the Memory of Romanian Exile, which I spared you from trying to read. I'm going to go back in time a bit here. RFERL made copies of the Hungarian, Polish, and Russian services on open reel tape, one-to-one, prior to shipping the collection to Stanford in 2000. The Hungarian and Polish content, 4,881 and 33,525 reels, respectively, were copied one-to-one open reel tape. The Russian, 33,525 reels. I'll get to a little bit more about that in a second. This is just what we've done with some of the partner institutions on our website. We've created some places for them to put some information about their holdings online. The Czechoslovak Documentation Center, for example, has no money and no staff, so this is really their only opportunity to get the word out there and make themselves discoverable. Back to the partner projects. In 2010, the National Digital Archives of Poland partnered with Polish Radio to digitize its copy, and Polish Radio digitized the tapes at a specification suggested by Hoover, and now serves as the access point for Polish service broadcast content, frankly relieving us of that duty as well. Hoover received a copy of the Preservation Masters in exchange for digitizing the recordings of two RFE-RL-related collections we had, which was only 146 in number. So in exchange for digitizing 164 recordings, we got 24-bit BWFs of 15,428 reels we'd otherwise be on the hook to digitize. That's 18% of the total number of open reel tapes. Similar projects are underway with the Hungarian and Russian language services, which themselves account for 44% of the open reel tape holdings. Altogether, 62% of the open reel holdings have been accounted for by these partner projects. This is because we digitized some of those collections, now they're up on our website. I'm going to try to breeze through this stuff. Items digitized by Hoover are available on site on workstations at this time. Born digital content is available upon request. Finding Aid has since been separated into 32 series by language service and some sub-series. Reference is largely by broadcast date because that's all we've got. That's all that we know about this material because that's all that was given to us. What you see here is a script for a Polish language program that features a Ringo Starr interview. And a gentleman wrote to us trying to find some information on this Ringo Starr thing as he was writing a book on the Beatles. And we obviously know that Art Blakey and Dizzy Gillespie appeared. We obviously know that Ella Fitzgerald and Dave Brubeck appeared. We don't know when. It's a needle in a haystack in every case. However, while fulfilling an altogether different request, Jim stumbled upon this Russian service recording from July 1st of 1963, featuring Phil Woods, interviewed about his experience playing in the Soviet Union. So I'm going to play, this is a short clip right here.
Phil принес сюда в студию свой альтовый саксофон. Попросим его сейчас играть нам оригинал мелодии «Нет, скажешь ты». Phil, what was the original like?
Well, I'll play it for you.
Это был оригинал. А вот композиция, написанная советским композитором «Нет, скажешь ты», аранжированная американцем в бразильском ритме и исполняемая американскими музыкантами.
These recordings would later be performed by a large ensemble featuring Art Farmer, Zoot Sims, and arrangements by Al Cohn. I'm going to switch back over to Jim, who's going to talk just a little bit about... We don't have time, unfortunately. You want to talk about it?
Sure. One of the great things about this collection is that we don't have to worry about copyright. The radios are thrilled anytime we can get material online. To date, we've been doing kind of ad hoc on social media, YouTube, SoundCloud. And it's just a way of getting things out there. And eventually, we're in the process of collecting everything and putting it in a more systematic central location on our website. So hopefully pretty soon we'll have it all up online. You can just go to hoover.org and you'll be able to listen to everything you want to. Okay, so progress. This quote that you're seeing here on the screen was something I came across last August. Mary Snyder's, I apologize if I screwed that name up, at Presta Center. This was his quote that Europe, when after all those machines can't exist anymore, is going to lose 70% of their holdings and 30% will be preserved. I'm pleased to say that we're the reverse. We have digital surrogates for 70% of the collection, and we have 30% remaining. We have surrogates for the Russian service, Polish service, Hungarian service, we're working on the Romanian, Czechoslovak and Bulgarian services right now, Afghan as well, excuse me. And so that's RFE and the quick rundown of it. It's as we mentioned before, it's a massive collection of 300,000 plus sound recordings. And so I guess now it's question time.
Are we doing that later?
Oh, we do.
Yeah, we are a little short on time, but maybe time for one or two questions. I see one here.
I'm unemployed in the remote on the other side of the country. How do I do research at the Hoover Library?
I'm not sure that I understand the question.
Well, among other things, I was interested in a copy of the Pravda in 1946. Could I go to the whole Hoover Library across the country to get a copy of that?
You could contact me. I'm the person that handles all reference requests. That's okay. My contact information right there.
Okay, thanks, James and Brandon. Really, really great presentation.